Hi, I'm Femi Oke. Today on the stream, we are joined by the veteran journalist, a CEO and executive editor of the news site Rappler, a Nobel laureate, Maria Ressa, and I should also add, friend of the stream. Maria, thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to be talking about the future for press freedom in the Philippines. Is there even a present for press freedom in the Philippines?
You know, I would say TBD. You know, we're at a place where the outgoing administration certainly kind of punted the ball to the incoming one, and we need to see what the Marcos administration is going to do. But the last few days, a week before the end of the Duterte administration, websites were blocked, news websites. These progressive news sites are a decade old. You know, all of a sudden, a country that has only blocked pornographic websites has done something it has never done before. That was followed by new laws. It's a trial balloon for broadcast stations where it almost functions like a form of prior restraint. Block timers need to go through the NTC, which, if you remember, actually took away the license to operate of ABS-CBN, right? They asked the largest broadcaster to shut down. And then the last two things that happened before the end of the Marcos administration were Rappler-related. 2 days before the end of the administration, before President Marcos took his oath of office, we effectively got our shutdown order. And of course, we are fighting that in court. We continue to operate business as usual. And then a few days after President Marcos took office, I then and a former colleague received really horrendous news that the Court of Appeals denied our appeal on cyber libel. So this is, you know, I've called it death by a thousand cuts, but Femi, I feel like we've talked about this for a while.
And it's all coming together all at the same time. Maria, behind me, I have an image of you and your colleagues from 2018. That was the first time when we heard about Rappler being threatened with a shutdown. 2018, you're still going. What is it like behind the scenes?
Tired, exhausted, but yet rejuvenated, if that makes sense, right? That was, as you said, 2018. We got the first shutdown order in January 2018. We immediately told everybody what was happening. It was unprecedented, the first time the SEC had ever done something like this to any company with a PDR and to a news organization, right? So we did that then, and we continued to fight it in court. As you know, I went from 2018, when maybe we had 14 investigations, they came down to 11 cases. Then it went all the way down to now I have 7 criminal cases. Rappler has 8, including the SEC case. So it's become like pollution. You know, it's in the air we breathe, and yet we know that it is incredibly important to keep doing our jobs, that the mission of journalism is more important today than it has ever been.
Maria, I'm going to give our audience who are watching right now on YouTube an opportunity to talk to you, to ask you questions, to find out more about press freedom in the Philippines, what is possible, what is not possible. So YouTube, if you're on there right now, you can speak to Maria. It's very difficult to get hold of her, so this is a wonderful opportunity for you to do so. I'm going to move along to one of your cohorts. Her name is Ronalyn Olia. She's the managing editor of Bulad Plat in the Philippines.
Yes.
And we've been talking to her recently about what is the landscape like for independent journalists. This is what she told us.
For its consistent human rights reporting, and for exposing the lies peddled by the powers that be, Bulad Plat, the longest-running online media outfit in the Philippines, has been repeatedly red-tagged and subjected to cyber attacks. Recently, a government agency ordered the blocking of our website under the guise of fighting terrorism. We condemn this unconstitutional act as a violation of our right to publish, a violation of the right of our readers and subscribers to access timely, relevant, and factual information. This is yet another form of harassment against the independent media in the Philippines.
It's really interesting because I know whenever we talk to you, Maria, you bring your trolls along with you. You're very generous. You share them with us on YouTube.
Thank you.
On YouTube, I spotted a comment about, well, the reason you were sued was because you were lying. We've talked about this as well. What is that like as a journalist? And this happens to other journalists in the Philippines, where there's the cabal of trolls who are ready. Who are they? What are they doing? What is the point?
Yeah, so think about it as, you know, a system that, and I was using epidemiology before the pandemic happened, but let's use that, right? You introduce a virus of lies into the system, so that is disinformation, right? So someone wanted to do that, but then it infects real people. And in many ways, psychological studies have shown that once they believe it, it's far harder to change their minds. And you see things like this, say, with Stop the Steal in the United States, right, with what's happening with January 6th. So when that happens, these are real people. But YouTube is a special case because just in the last year or so, YouTube became number one. And in terms of the amount of disinformation on video, that is where it is seeded first, and then Facebook is used to distribute it. Twitter is just being breached right now by disinformation networks. Also really important to note that the Duterte and Marcos disinformation networks have worked together since 2016. But now what we saw leading up to the election of President Marcos today was really a concerted effort to answer the charges of history with plausible answers. Like, for example, where did the Marcoses get their wealth? Well, if you live in one of the poorer neighborhoods in the Philippines, and many news organizations, international news organizations came in with these same stories, they will tell you that the reason they voted for Marcos is because they know they will get gold. And that is a video that was seeded, a lie on YouTube, spread on Facebook, and real people believe it. In terms of attacks, like against me, against any opposition politician, actually, forget it, against news organizations. These types of attacks hammer the credibility, you know, and there was a big data case study that was done by ICFJ and UNESCO in 2021. They looked at the attacks against me, over 500,000 attacks, and they showed that 60% of the attacks were meant to tear down my credibility. 40% were literally aimed at me to tear down my spirit. That, by the way, is the tactic that is more prevalent today on Twitter. As these information operations seep into Twitter, what they're doing is creating more new accounts, right? So they will have zero followers or 10 followers, and then they will take dormant old accounts, again, zero to 10 followers, and they will just trash you. You know, and I keep thinking, what kind of ripple do they want? There is no ripple. The goal is to make you, to affect you, to make you stop. So we've just gathered the data, and we'll be doing a story on this, Femi. But it is fascinating to watch. I just wish that I wasn't the target.
Yeah, it's fascinating. If you're observing it from somebody else and it's not coming directly to your account, I totally understand that. For many years, we thought it was the Duterte administration that had issues with free press, journalism, Rappler's news site, with you. Then there's a new administration coming in, a new Marcos administration coming in. Earlier, we spoke to Sean Crispin. He is from the Committee to Protect Journalists. I want to share with you his optimistic take of what that change in administration might actually produce. When you hear him, as soon as he's finished, I would really love your response, Maria. Here's Sean, first of all.
It's CPJ's hope that the damage done to Philippine press freedom under the Duterte administration is reversed under the new Marcos Jr. government. The new president has said he plans to unify the nation, and we have asserted that a meaningful step in that direction would be to reverse his predecessor's anti-press policies and allow the press to report freely without fear of reprisal. The new president has a strong popular mandate. He was elected overwhelmingly, and we've argued that he should put that democratic mandate to use by allowing the press to report freely, to allowing journalists to operate without fear of reprisal, And to effectively restore the Philippines' place as one of the freest media in Asia, a reputation it had previously and that was damaged under Duterte.
I have the same hopes. Remember, at the beginning I said TBD, so we wait to see what President Marcos actually does. But these hopes have to be pragmatic. I mean, you know, you take a look at the behavior during the campaign where candidate Marcos was very much like Jair Bolsonaro in Brazil, where, you know, he travels with his cadre of bloggers and vloggers and actually sets his news agenda. He's done that in his first week in office without dealing with the media. Because why bother with those pesky journalists who ask these tough questions? I hope, right? We at Rappler continue to hope it's a new administration, but the danger signals are there, and walking into July with the threat of a shutdown certainly makes you worry, right? And you heard what Len said from Bulatlat. This is like shoot first, ask questions later. They took down the website. They tried to file for a temporary restraining order and the court denied it. So they are fighting for their rights while they've already been gagged. In our case, hope for the best, but we are also prepared for the worst. And we continue to ask the judges and the justices in our court system to maintain rule of law, to uphold press freedom, and appeal to the incoming president, right? Here's the downfall of this, right, Femi? I think part of the problem is the President Marcos is coming to power at an extremely difficult time globally. His biggest problem is going to be inflation and controlling these pesky questions, controlling media, what we are seeing, the information operations on social media, by getting control of that in some ways makes their lives easier. I guess what I would like to say is, you know, we're not your enemy. We understand the difficulties that are there. Do not make us the enemy. Actually, beyond that, please follow the Constitution.
There's a phrase that you use and your supporters and people who feel that Rappler and other journalistic outlets are really important, which is hold the line. Practically, what does that mean? Because from my perspective, I am seeing Rappler, yourself, other independent journalists having to take a lot of pressure from the authorities in the Philippines. But how do you push back? How do you survive?
So hold the line is, you know, that line of the Constitution where our rights are defined. The Philippine Constitution is like the U.S. We have a Bill of Rights. Press freedom is enshrined. Freedom of expression, freedom of speech, right? And what we have experienced in the last 6 years is like having a bulldozer try to push you back, because the end goal of any autocrat, dictator to be, is to have everyone voluntarily give up their rights, because then they're not autocrats or dictators. It's the people who want it. Well, we sound the alarm. There is a concerted effort to push back, to force us to give up these rights. And we're not going to voluntarily give up our rights. How do we do our jobs? We just keep doing our jobs. It's certainly much harder. But Femi, you know this. I don't think it's in the Philippines alone. Press freedom in the last decade has, you know, I think if you look at CPJ's own and RSF's own indexes, you can see that it's rolled back. Beyond that, the freedom, oh my gosh, another study, Freedom House, has shown that democracy itself has rolled back in the last 15 years, right? So what is happening to journalists is a natural consequence of losing our democracy. And I think that's part of the reason, you know, we say, please do not voluntarily give up your rights.
I am going to spend some time engaging with some of the comments and questions that we're getting in on YouTube right now. So let's start with this one. What would you change to protect journalism in Philippines if you could? What would be different?
Checks and balances. Mm-hmm. We go back to, you know, taking out the trolls and the intimidation tactics, because the way journalists are being controlled now is not even by power as much as the plausible deniability of power by social media. You ask a tough question in a press conference, you will not just have to deal with the person you're asking, but you are getting clobbered online. That's the first step, right? Respect, again, civility. What does that mean in the age of social media? This is where I've also talked about technology platforms really abdicating responsibility for protecting the public sphere. It isn't just journalists who are attacked. Women, LGBTQ, anyone who is already marginalized in the real world gets marginalized even further on social media. And in the Nobel lecture, I actually said that, you know, what these technology platforms have done is to encourage the worst of human nature. That is what spreads fastest and furthest, lies laced with anger and hate. And that creates emergent human behavior that, I mean, we don't want this for our future. You just saw Dimitri and I in Oslo accepting the Nobel Prize in December. And 4 months after that happened, Russia invaded Ukraine. Dimitri's news organization is no longer publishing in Russia.
Oh, yes.
And we are facing our own problems here, right?
Another thought here, absolutely, Maria. Another thought here. Which comes from Wiklan Raz, who's watching us both right now. He said, before, the Philippines did have media freedom, but now that Marcos is in power, definitely there's going to be less freedom of the media and for journalists. That is Wickram's prediction. You said, kind of, let's see, right? But the idea of that this Philippines hasn't always been like this, when did it change?
1972 was when the father of our president today declared martial law and stayed in power for almost 21 years, essentially controlling media. That is the first step of anyone who wants to gain power in a country. I worked in what was then the government station, and these were, sorry, not in 1972, in 1986.
You would have been a baby journalist if it was 1972.
I know, right?
Child prodigy.
But think about it.
Yes.
Well, what I learned in 1986 when I came back is every time there was a coup attempt, they always went for the media, for the broadcast journalists, right? So the first step of anyone wanting power is control information. And that is part of the reason I think we're under threat. I think that... It's a combination of getting rid of the impunity that is happening in the virtual world, because this concept that there's a difference between the virtual world and the real world really needs to change. We all live, there's only one of us, we live in both the physical and the real world. And what we have seen globally is that when impunity reigns online, when there is online violence, there is real-world violence. When it's impunity online, it kills the checks and balances in the real world and kills rule of law.
I'm going to bring in another new voice to our conversation, and this is Regine. She's a Manila reporter for The Washington Post. I feel that she is bracing for more problems to come for journalism in the Philippines. Here's Regine.
President Ferdinand Marcos Jr.'s track record speaks for itself. On the campaign trail, he shied away from debates and critical interviews. Reporters tailing him have been roughhoused, shoved, sometimes deliberately ignored while asking questions. Filipino journalists are bracing themselves for more of the same now that he has come into power. The Philippine press faces a serious existential crisis in the time of disinformation, which stands to be institutionalized under the Marcos presidency. Definitely, we're expecting attacks against journalists coming from propagandists, trolls, sometimes even government officials themselves, to continue and maybe even move offline.
Mm. Are you being optimistic for us here on the stream, Maria? Are you also bracing for the worst?
Well, she has come under intense attack, right? This is what happens. You know the truth. I guess part of the difference is that I've come under the same intense attacks, but I gotta be hopeful, right? Bracing. That's a good word. look, Sean Crispin, CPJ, and Regine Cabata from Washington Post, both these things are aligned. And we won't know until President Marcos takes the first steps. His track record isn't great. I mean, you know, in the campaign, as Regine pointed out, and the attacks online have been horrendous and has actually gotten worse after he was elected, right? Lenny Robredo, the former vice president who ran against him, the attacks never stopped. They continued. And certainly the attacks against me have escalated again. So we'll see. But the last thing I'll say is the one thing that the Marcos administration cannot get away from is history, right? These really tough questions. Where's the $10 billion your family is accused of stealing? Questions like this are difficult for President Marcos to address. In fact, he switches this way. It's part of the reason he's avoided some of the debates and the journalists' questions. You asked, you know, what will happen to Rappler under that. We were the ones who exposed a lot of these lies in the Marcoses. And I think that I hope that the Marcos family moves away from vindictive actions now that they're in power and realizes that they must unite. Like, this is his campaign speech, right? In his first campaign rally, he actually mentioned the word unity 21 times in 20 minutes. Well, now push comes to shove, he's in power. Please unite us.
I want to acknowledge a lot of the sentiment that I am seeing from our online audience who are watching right now. While there is support for you and understanding for what journalism is, there seems to be a basic misunderstanding that you report on what is happening. You're not there to support particular political figures. And so there is a certain amount of people being upset with Rappler for reporting what they investigate and they find out. Is that an issue with people not understanding journalism, or do they not care?
That's a great question, but I think it is also the problem when influencers are created in a field of journalism, right? The goal is not propaganda. The goal is journalism. Journalism's goal is to hold power to account. We ask those questions. And the critical factor for a good journalist is actually the courage to ask those questions. Well, influencers and social media is all about popularity. And the mistake, I think, that often gets passed along is that a journalist is an influencer. Please never call a journalist an influencer in this way, right? We're not in it to be popular. We're not in it to make you feel better. We're in it to hold power to account. That's why we tell our stories. So, yes, the short answer to your question is definitely there's a misunderstanding. It was always difficult, even before the time of social media, right, to explain standards and ethics and how we do these, our own checks and balances. But now, double, triple, quadruply hard, because disinformation, these information operations are meant to try to use these feelings of nationalism and then to label independent journalists are as, you know, they're against our nation. How many times in many different countries do I see this? In Brazil, in India, in Hungary, in Turkey, in the Philippines, where journalists are under attack, they are labeled as, well, they are not nationalists, right? They don't care about their country. This is disinformation. That is wrong. The reason why journalists care about their nations, the reason why we do our jobs, is precisely because we care about the nation.
I am just looking online. I logged on to Rappler earlier on today. Have a look here on my laptop. Maria knows this already, but I was just checking. Rappler was still there, still doing its work. And it still is, despite the constant threats. Maria Ressa, it is so good to always have you here on the stream and your perspective as well. We wish you every success with your mission to keep telling the truth and report, and all of your colleagues in the Philippines. Thanks for joining us on the stream today. We also thank you on YouTube for your comments, opinions, and takes. I will see you the next time. Take care.